deviants. Welcome to show! I am the Clinteris, and I am here with...
I'm too old for this shit.
And I'm the lethal weapon.
And we are the Social Deviants, who are here today to talk about Lethal Weapon.
All right.
The weapon that is lethal.
Yes.
Boy.
So, this fool did have an accent still.
Dude, he did. It's funny. Yeah,
dude, that was like the first like 30 minutes of the movie, like that fool's accent was coming out pretty thick.
Well, the problem was is that like when he would like talk slowly, you could see like you can see that he's like trying to act like he's an American, but when he's like he was getting serious,
yeah,
total Australian act. Fool was Mad Max coming out,
dude. And then even still, like when he had that whole scene when he's like looking at the picture and he's crying,
oh yeah,
and he's like
talking to himself.
Like he's like talking to the picture and he's just like,
Vegemite. Victoria Lynn. No.
Was it weird to you that he like said her full name?
Yeah, I don't understand. And we're talking about, obviously we're talking about, what's his name?
Mel Gibby?
Mel Gibson's character. Yeah, Mel Gibson's character, right? And this is before, I mean, he may have always been crazy, but he wasn't overtly crazy in this back in the day. So, but yeah, we're obviously talking about Mel Gibson.
Yeah, and we're talking about like how his accent was breaking through a lot of the scenes.
I mean, this was what, like in 87, I'd want to say. When was this?
83, bro?
No, this was 87. Lethal Weapon came out in 87, right?
Oh, okay, never mind.
You're talking about when you looked at the yearbook.
It was 84.
It was 83, but she was 22, so she was 18 in the yearbook. 4 years later, right, she was 22. And we're talking about the woman that...
Okay.
So the movie was like Gooch said, the movie was released on March 6, 1987, made for $15 million. It actually made $120 million.
Of course, this is a great film.
At the box office.
All well earned.
Yes. So, the movie obviously starts off with Jingle Bell Rock. So, as Gooch said,
it's a Christmas movie. That's what I brought. I put it up there. It's a Christmas movie.
This movie starts with the two best things: Jingle Bell Rocks and tits.
Yeah.
And well, also cocaine.
Three of the best things.
And the score has like this saxophone. Fucking 80s.
Oh. Yes.
It's super dated and terrible, but kind of good.
Well, it's the Lethal Weapon soundtrack, because you'll hear that same sax throughout the whole series. Whether it was in 87, which was, and then part four, which was, I think, in 96. Right? And it's the same. It's that soundtrack. It's like, the one that people used it.
And I feel like whenever you watch like a show or something that's doing like a play on the 80s, they always have like that sort of like,
yes,
like good rip. They always have that like saxophone sort of fucking like.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't do a good mouth saxophone.
Yeah, this guy. So the movie was written by Shane Black.
Yes, it was.
Predator, baby.
He's in Predator, and He did some other stuff too, if I'm not mistaken.
He did part two. He wrote part one and part two, and he wanted to end it there. By the way, I mean, this is obviously we're watching part one, but to elaborate on what Clint was saying is that Shane Black wanted to end it in part two. And maybe we'll go on to watch part two later and do a review on it. But Mel Gibson's character, Riggs, was supposed to die in part two, and make it an extremely, extremely dark movie. I mean, this movie was pretty freaking dark too.
Yeah.
Part one.
Yeah.
And what poor Riggs was going through, and then obviously, you know, with Murtaugh and his family later on in the film. But he wanted to make it a good story, right? He wanted Riggs to die in part one, in part two, I mean. And Shane Black got pissed, and that's why the story in part three was kind of wonky, and part four was a little bit better. But I mean, part one and part two are great films. I mean, you like feel for these guys, you know. You feel for Murtaugh, you feel for Riggs, and and what they're going through in this movie. This movie's an excellent movie, by the way. I mean, it is an action film. And what do you expect from the 80s, from Mel Gibson, and not so much for Danny Glover, but like this the way, you know, way this movie is put out there. It's an exceptional film, I think.
Oh, yeah. And it's got all the Predator tie-ins, right? You got Shane Black, you got fucking Danny Glover, you got Gary Busey. Yeah.
Gary Busey, yeah, yeah.
Fucking Gary Busey. Did the movie, what city does the movie take place in?
In L.A.
L.A.? Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. It's hard. They don't think, do they explicitly say that in the movie?
I don't think so.
I think you have to sort of infer it.
It's in L.A. It's in L.A.
Oh, because there was like a desert nearby, yeah, so yeah, I was like, this kind of has to be in L.A.
That's probably where they fucking have Coachella.
It's in L.A. I mean, obviously, it's like Christmas and stuff, and it's like winter, but shit is sunny and like warm. Yeah, that's good, like, point, that's yeah. Southern California in a fucking nutshell for you and shit.
True.
So, and then let's talk about Canadian Mist.
Don't know what that is. Like,
it's a Canadian whiskey. I know it still exists.
Is it a whiskey? Really?
It's a whiskey, yeah. They mentioned it when Riggs came over for dinner. They offered it to him. If you look at, I think when Mel Gibson is chasing Gary Busey, you can see a billboard of it.
Oh, really?
At the very end, yeah.
I was thinking Canada Dry. The ginger ale.
The ginger ale. Well, yeah. It's actually a whiskey.
I always thought it was going to be some alcoholic beverage, but I never thought it was a whiskey, to be honest with you. Because like later on in that scene after they go to the dinner, they go to eat with Murtaugh's family, he offers them Kitty and Miss, and then when they're on the boat, he gives them a Coors.
Yeah.
So I always thought it was like some sort of beer that Murtaugh offered them because of that. So I know I didn't know what Canadian Miss was until obviously Clint brought it up here.
Is it a real whiskey?
It is. I'm looking at
it. It is.
It's $16.99 at Target. So all you want some Canadian Mist, there you go.
On my next
not a sponsor, but go buy some and tell us what it tastes like.
We're going to make them a sponsor. Yeah. Canadian Mist. You're going to get 3 sales right now.
So let's talk about the guys themselves.
All right.
Danny Glover. Now, this fool is in pretty good shape. This fool had like a 6-pack in this movie. I think he even talked about how he keeps himself in good shape during the course of the film. And his character was in Vietnam. And the Murtaugh character was supposed to be 50 years old.
Yeah.
Now, Danny Glover was only 40 when they shot this.
Yeah.
Which is odd, kind of. And I don't know. Did you think they made him look older than he was? Or that's just the way he looks?
Well, I mean, like,
he looks young than we know him now.
Dude, look at Mel Gibson. He was supposed to play a 39-year-old. The fool was 30. Like, he looks like a man at 30. And, like, when I look at myself, like, pictures of myself at 30, I look like a child, you know?
Yeah.
So
was he really supposed to be 30? He wasn't supposed to be 39 in this film, was he?
I think so. He was,
no,
or,
I don't think so.
Or maybe he was supposed to be 30 and he was really 39.
Because he was, like, he was 19 at the end of, like, the Vietnam War. Like at the very end, and like he was like the special forces that stayed there after the Vietnam conflict, the Vietnam War, right? And Danny Glover said that he was in Nam in 65, which was even prior to the starting of the Vietnam War. So I think that there's almost like 10 years between them at that point, even then.
Yeah.
So if Murtaugh was 50 in this film, I always assume that Riggs was around 30-ish, like 20 years. There's like a 20-year difference between the two. That's what I always assumed.
That's what I was saying. He was 30.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, 30. Oh, I thought you said 39.
Well, no. Mel Gibson was 39. Riggs was 30.
Oh, yeah.
No, Mel Gibson was 30 when they shot
this. Mel Gibson was 30 in this one.
Oh, fuck.
He was 30.
Yeah.
Danny Glover was 40.
Yeah, Danny Glover was 40.
There you go. So I was right. 30-year-old looking like a man. And when I look at my own pictures, I look like a child.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Well, everyone's fucking different, right?
And Gary Busey is always looking like he was like a leather bag on his face.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug, man.
Now Danny Glover was stunned when he saw his daughter in that dress, and that actress Do you have her up?
Tracy Wolf.
And she appeared in all the movies?
All the movies. That's all the only thing she's known
for. It's like kind of only thing she's ever done.
That's the only thing she's ever done. And then she looked like she was in a TV series recently in 2020. Chapter 13 Come Together. I don't know what that is. I guess she was on a TV series on some channel recently, 2020. But up until that point, all she's ever done was Lethal Weapon.
That's all you need, bro. Yeah. Get paid.
Now, in that moment, if that was your daughter, how would you react to that moment? You see your daughter in a dress like that for the first time. And I don't know if that was maybe the first time he realized she was growing up to be a woman or not, but...
All I can say is when I saw that scene, I'm like, fuck, that's going to be me one day. I'm going to be standing there, my daughter's going to come down in this slinky dress, be like, oh, this is what I'm going to wear for fucking whatever.
And just wait, in part two, you're gonna see your daughter in a commercial, in a condom commercial. Imagine.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, I don't know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you dread. You know, it's like when she brings a boy home for the first time. It's like, all right, fucker, here's my shotgun. You know, whatever. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't happen. Know. You're the parent, Devo. So.
He handled it as best he could. He just mumbled, and that's probably what I'm going to end up doing. And then just cursing myself at the end.
That's funny.
So, the dude that plays Mr. Mendez. I forgot who that actor was. That fool looked hella young too in this movie. He was just a bit role, I believe.
The jumper?
No, the guy that was buying the heroin.
Yeah, Ed O'Ross is guy's name. And this dude's been in a bunch of stuff. He's 70 now, 74
Jesus
now.
Jesus Christ! I mean,
that fool looked hella young in this. And then obviously Gary Busey plays Mr. Joshua. We see Mel Gibson at the very beginning. He wakes up and he smokes a cigarette. And drinks a Coors, and Devo, he's got that fucking mullet.
I think you're burying the lead here. We start this movie off with a half naked woman. We cut straight to fucking Murtaugh, who's naked in a bath, and then it cuts to Riggs, who's naked, fucking sleeping in bed. Like this movie starts off with nothing but nudity.
No, the naked in bed part is after the part where he goes to the Christmas tree lot and tries to buy Coke with a hundred bucks.
You sure?
Like, it's a hundred. So it's he puts a hundred down and it's like, oh, he's all stop. He's all shut the fuck up, man. I'm gonna make me lose my count. And he's like counting a hundred.
Huh.
And that's when they show him after that scene is when they go to the scene that you guys are talking about. Where he's fucking in his bed.
Because I thought that was our introduction to Riggs.
No, our introduction to Riggs is the crazy one.
Fuck, man. My fucking memory, dude.
Oh, I love this film, so I've watched it a lot. That's why I know. So
anyway, no, like you said,
he's doing a...
So he does, he goes to it, and they do the whole thing, and he goes... What Clint was saying is that the magnificent mullet. In that scene but that scene's super dark, dude. He's like, it's crazy because he's contemplating committing suicide. And if you listen to the background, like they're playing like the Warner Brothers cartoon of the Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
So it's like, and you hear like, you know, Bugs Bunny talking about, oh, who's gonna be what, and you hear this cartoon in the background, and fucking poor Riggs is like contemplating whether or not he's going to put a bullet in his head. And it's a crazy scene. It's a really good scene. I agree. I love it. I mean, it's very dark.
Oh, yeah.
And of course he doesn't do it. And it goes into the next scene where Murtaugh goes to the scene that you're talking about. The one where he's in the bath. And they go, that's when they both meet at the precinct. And that's a funny scene. The precinct is awesome. Love the precinct scene.
Oh, dude, yeah. When that fool's like trying to fucking clean his gun.
Yeah.
He's just looking at his gun. He just pulls it out. He's like, oh, I have a gun.
Gun! Yeah. They're all looking at like, you look younger with the beard. And we're talking fuck you guys.
Oh, no. It wasn't that. He's like, oh, you shaved. He's like, yeah, great work, detective.
Great detective work.
In that scene where they where he's buying the Coke. He's doing the Coke deal. Which was weird because he says he's a cop. He like reveals it quickly. They don't shoot him immediately like they do in other movies, but they actually think he's a fake.
Yeah.
And then like his backup is down the street and he's in there by himself. I mean, obviously they show that he can handle himself, I guess so. But he like poked one dude in the eye, like Curly and Moe and shit.
Yeah. He goes, he's like,
which was ridiculous.
And like socks like, him on the head and all
like,
that.
Whoop, 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 whoop. And he did like, he's like, whoop, and he pulls out his gun at the same time at the grid.
Yeah.
Shit. He's like, that's a real gun. I'm a real cop and this is a real badge and type of shit. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
And then you know, they establish him as this crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. I think I need to watch the rest of the movies, Gooch, but do you know whether or not they play out this whole craziness over the course of the next movies?
Because
I know he's like recovered from it at some point because when he's dating Rene Russo and all that shit.
In the second one, he continues his kind of like his destructive personality that he has, right? Especially because in the second one, he starts to get over what happened to his wife. Right. And again, in the second one, it's really good because he falls in love with this like the second one where it's like there's these South African people that are selling drugs and embezzling money and like a bunch of gold and stuff like that. And it and one of the characters is like the secretary of the main bad guy in that film. And he falls in love with her. Right. And they kill her because of him. Yeah. And it turns out that one of the hitmen, like the main hitman guy this person is the one that killed his wife. So he goes all crazy again. Right. And he goes nuts. That's when he drives his car up to this house on stilts on the side of the house on the side of this mountain. And he fucking ties up his car to that big ass truck that he has to the side of the mountain and pulls the damn house down.
Fucking Joe Pesci was in the second one also.
And Joe Pesci was in the second one as well, and he had to save him from that too because he was in there, and he was saving him, but obviously Riggs was going crazy, and it was only until the third one showed up. I mean, that's why Shane Black wanted him to die because he's this like broken character. Right. Yeah. How could he ever be fixed? And Shane Black, I think that's what he wanted to portray. I mean, Murtaugh was fixing him, but after the second film, and it broke him even more. Right. So ultimately, Shane Black wanted to kill him off, but they saw all the money they was making, and then they made part three. And part three is obviously the atypical, like, you know, redemption movie. And again, if we watch, we go watch. I don't want to go into it because it was part one, but it does go in more into depth of the characters that we are going over in this review.
Right.
And Gucci mentioned the scene where he almost kills himself. He did a pretty well acted scene, actually.
I thought he did a good job. Subsequently, when he goes to, they go in. You know, they meet each other, and obviously Murtaugh thinks that he's nuts, and he goes to, when they go, they first meet him, he's like, he goes, whether you think that I'm, you know, I'm nuts because I'm going looking for a pension, then I'm fucked, or I'm really am crazy, and I'm fucked even more. Yeah. And then he asks Murtaugh, he's like, what do you think I am? He's like, I'm fucked, and he's like you.
Yeah.
And
right at the beginning of that conversation, they're talking about like Mel Gibson's sort of like past before the movie.
Yeah.
And I think he talks about the Phoenix Project as being something that Mel Gibson participated in. And I looked that up. There is nothing. There's no Phoenix Project, but there's something called a Phoenix Program that was real and actually did do the type of shit that Danny Glover was alluding to try to destabilize the Viet Cong and so forth. So I thought that was interesting. They sort of tried to,
steep
it in some sort of reality.
Yeah, they pieced together because like Air America, is something like what the CIA did as well. The whole thing about running like a shadow program about like putting intel in I don't know about selling drugs part, but they did like run guns for a friendly rebel units and shit like that to destabilize the North Vietnamese. Right. I don't know if it was called Air America, but they did. CIA did have a program that did that too. So they did steep it in some sort of reality.
The PMC that they had.
Yeah.
But there is like a documentary about Mercs called Shadow Company, which is interesting.
Yeah. I agree.
So then, you know, he even talks about how he's like, Danny Glover's like, that said that Mel Gibson was into martial arts. He's like, oh, Tai Chi and all that killer stuff. And I'm like, Tai Chi, that's not really a violent martial art.
No, honestly. Of course. He's Danny Glover don't know no shit about it. Yeah. His character don't know shit about it either.
He does mention later on jiu-jitsu, which was interesting. Yeah. This predates UFC, obviously, so I guess jiu-jitsu was a thing that was known, or maybe that's something that Shane Black knew specifically and put it in there, which I thought was interesting. And later on, you see at the very end that he actually does use some martial arts. He actually triangle chokes Gary Busey at the end.
Yeah. Tries to get an arm bar, doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was using some like mixed martial arts or martial arts techniques.
Full throw and fucking Jean-Claude-esque roundhouses.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I feel like when he fought Jet Li in the fourth movie, it's almost like that's forgotten. Like he's supposed to be some sort of martial arts guy. So he should have at least had some bit of a chance against Jet Li.
I don't remember what happened in Lethal Weapon 2, but I feel like in the 80s, like being a white boy knowing martial arts was like the thing in the movies, right? Like you got Jean-Claude, you got fucking Mel Gibson, fucking who's the crazy fucking Aikido guy, fucking
Steven Seagal.
Seagal, you know, fucking like that was the thing.
Sensei
right?
Seagal.
Yeah. So I think that was just a play on top of that, and then maybe I don't remember too much of two, but I do remember that as the movies progressed, it was less about him being a lethal weapon with his hands and all that, and more about just like being a fucking crazy motherfucker.
And two, it continued on. Three was less because Renee Russo's character came in, and they trying to show her that she's such a badass as he is. And then I think in part four, they want to try to kind of like push that how badass Jet Li was. And I think that's what they want to try to portray. Okay. Because even like, I mean, I don't give a damn how strong you are. In part four, I mean, I remember part where clear. Jet Li gets a full fucking haymaker from Murtaugh. I mean, a full haymaker from Murtaugh. And Jet Li, it was like, it didn't even faze him. I mean, I don't care who you are. Murtaugh is a big fucking guy. Even at that point, he's like 67, apparently, according to their age. But you get a full haymaker. A full haymaker to the face. I don't care who you are. You're going to get fucked up.
Yeah,
I mean in that movie again they made well, they wanted to make Jet Li bigger than life. I mean he had like a piece of rebar stuck through his body and he was fine. I mean ultimately I don't know if you guys remember this. I mean I love these films. I'm not gonna say how much I love these films. The way they killed Jet Li in that film, they dove into the water. There was an AK in the water like stuck underneath one of fucking Jet Li's cronies. They fucking busted a cap in his ass underwater. Like, it was like, like 10 shots point blank in Jet Li's chest. That's how they finally killed him. After they all beat him all up with a piece of rebar stuck through his stomach. So, again, it was supposed to make Jet Li be like, seem like some sort of fucking, like a fucking amazing beast in that one. In these other films, again, it was more, I don't want to say it was a bit more realistic. Obviously, it was an action film, but at least. I mean, you saw Joshua getting beat up. He got beat up, you know. Yeah. And even in the second film, guys are getting beat up. They got beat up. I mean, they're not gonna take a fucking rebar to the stomach and survive. You know what I mean? So so again, I think part four was a bit more extreme because again, it was like in the 90s, like late 90s. But in the 80s, I guess. I mean, I love these films. I think they're a bit more realistic. Even then, of course, it's ridiculous.
Gooch, speaking of Joshua, maybe you could explain why did they burn his arm? It was such a strange scene.
I agree. That's psycho. Why. I wanted to show that how dedicated they are. how loyal they are to this. Because Mendes was like, these are fucking mercenaries, man. I work with mercenaries. And he's like, they're loyal to me. And he was like, I'm going to burn his arm. And I guess it showed him, and he was down with the plan. I think that's, I mean, I agree. I have no idea why he did it. I mean, there had to be another way to prove that they're loyal.
It was a very odd.
Yes.
And then, but then they acted like he never was hurt from it or something like that the rest of the movie, even though they told him to go to the hospital. When Roger goes to see his friend Mike, tell him that his daughter's death was a homicide rather than a suicide. In that scene, in the background, across the street, you can see a Thrifty. And I was like, oh, shit, I forgot all about that place.
No,
I hadn't even thought about that place
this,
in years.
This movie's full of, like, 80s, like, life, like, life, he's living, I would say.
Yeah,
80s
so,
living.
It's fun fact, Rite Aid sells Thrifty ice cream.
Still? Really?
Yep. It's still branded as Thrifty?
Yeah, wow. The ice cream is, at least, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Thrifty was known for their ice cream.
They had good ice cream at Thrifty, by the way.
So there was a Thrifty right by my house growing up, and they used to have this ice cream called Chocolate Malted Crunch. Best ice cream ever. Yeah. And it's still available. Buy it at Rite Aid.
Wow. Remember they had that
Thrifty's? I didn't know Rite Aid still had ice cream.
Remember they had that Thrifty's right down the street?
Oh, yeah.
From where we lived? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. That was a good place to fucking get ice cream.
Yeah, it was. We went there all the time.
Yep.
let's talk about the jumper scene.
Ah, oh, I love the scene.
It's classic.
Do you really want to?
Now, I mean, obviously, if a cop did that in real life, you're getting fucking sued, obviously. But yeah, every time I see it, it just puts a smile on my face because the guy, the actor who is the guy who wants to be the jumper, you know, goes from don't touch me to get away to, you know.
To he's crazy.
Don't touch me. I'll kill myself. To, he's trying to kill me. It's like, bro, like, you know what I mean? Like, you were just trying to kill you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And, which is good, you know, man. It was just right after he's finna jump. So, I don't know. It just puts a smile on my face every time I see the scene. It's like, this is one of those scenes where, you know, Mel Gibson was becoming a big name actor. Yeah. And he had to show that charisma. This is one of the scenes that you think of that like showed that charisma. He's a completely different person now, but we won't get into that too much. How he's an anti-Semite, whatever heck he is now. But he, after that scene, we see Roger and Martin, Murtaugh and Riggs go at
just
it.
Just call him on Riggs.
Yeah, and Riggs basically, I mean, Murtaugh basically.
He's losing his shit.
Yeah, I mean, he basically just tempts them, Mel Gibson, to blow his head off.
Yeah.
And I guess that was it's one of the turning points in the movie where, you know, Murtaugh at that moment really realizes that this fool really is fucking nuts.
I mean, the way that he stopped the hammer from fucking shooting is that he put his fucking finger between the hammer and the bullet.
And the bullet, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's all, you're not looking for a psych fucking
pension.
You really are crazy. Yeah. He's all, and then
Rick
says, I'm hungry.
Dude, I love how like it goes from like, like Riggs is crazy, ready to kill himself, and then he's just cracking jokes like nothing ever happened.
If it was like I'm
like
hungry.
That's like true. I think that's like true psychosis, right?
I mean, I guess so. I mean, that's what they. The next scene is when that fool is eating a hot dog, and I mean Riggs is eating a hot dog in a car, like on the side of a fucking like free, like the freeway or a freeway overpass, like a bridge that looks over a freeway in fucking L.A. And Murtaugh has that big ass fucking brick of a phone. It's like it's like its own fucking docking station.
Yeah, well, which by the way is the first film of a cell phone.
Cell phone, there you go. And he's talking
Ever?
To the
Ever.
Psych chick.
Wow.
And he like tells Murtaugh like, yeah, I think he's really crazy. I think he's on the edge. And like she's like, yeah, thanks that you're telling me this.
Was that woman in the other movies?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but she's barely in this movie. Go ahead, Devo.
Fuck, what else was she in? She was in something like she's like a quintessential 80s
actress.
She's
all right, so she is the mom in the Goonies. The Mikey and Thanos' mom in the movie.
Like, give me a nice wet slippery kiss. Or like when they break the Statue of David and the penis falls off, and he's like, "That's my mom's favorite piece."
No, that's the mom. That's the mom.
Okay, okay, okay. So Mel Gibson's one-liners. This fool tried to deliver a bunch of one-liners, a bunch of like jokes, like, you know, Arnold has his, Sly has a couple. Like, how do you think they stacked up in like the 80s one-liner delivery mechanism?
I you know what?
It didn't even register for me. I didn't even think he was giving one-liners.
And I think that's part of the thing is that something will happen and he'll make a joke about it. And it's like, I would recognize that it was a joke. And it felt like it was supposed to be, like, to me, like, I interpreted it as, like, that's, like, you know, Arnold throws a knife in somebody, sticks to the wall, and he's, like, stick around, you know? Like, it was supposed to be like that. It was, like, a situational joke. But for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it was his Australian accent or just what was happening in the movie. Like, they just didn't have the same gravitas as they would with an Arnold.
No, I agree. I don't think he really has, like, some in here. I mean, like, I think I'm with Clint. Like, I mean, I've watched this film many times. I think Mel Gibson has mannerisms that maybe like go over through multiple films. But one-liners, I mean, I don't think he has any one-liners. I mean, the guy that has one-liners is fucking Danny Glover. His I'm too old for the shit one-liner. I mean, everyone knows that one-liner.
Yeah, but that's
right?
One.
But I don't think I ever remember any Mel Gibson one-liners from this film. Other than, I mean, and then Danny Glover has that one, and that's like the most famous thing. It's like, oh, I'm too old for the shit. Oh, that's Danny Glover from fucking, you know, from Lethal Weapon. And again, I don't think there is. Like, Arnold has multiple ones that are famous over different films. You know, obviously he has his I'll Be Back that he, you know, he puts in all these other fucking films. But like you said, like Stick Around for Predator, or is like Eyes to See You. From fucking, I mean, from,
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah. He was Sub-Zero. Now he's Plane Zero.
Plane Zero. Yeah, exactly. From all his films. But I don't know about Mel Gibson. I don't think he does.
I feel like he cracks more jokes in the later films than this particular
what
one.
I do know that he does in this film, that I think he does in multiple of these films, I don't know if he does it in another one, is that the shot that when he shoots people and he's like rolling around on the ground, like trying to shoot someone while he's like rolling around on the ground shooting. He does that multiple times in this series, right? And obviously it's very unbelievable that you're going to hit anyone doing that. But it's like a thing that I've only seen him do. And particular in Lethal Weapon films.
So when they go to investigate the guy at that house where those chicks are cooking up or cutting up the coke. Now, am I wrong? But Danny Glover fucked up. He asked the guy to see his hands, but he didn't actually show. They didn't actually end up showing his hands. He ended up having a gun that blasted him. Danny Glover like got distracted or I don't know what happened, but he fucked up. He almost got them killed.
Well, he thought that since he shot him in the leg, that and that was like the only gun the guy had. So and the guy was like reeling in pain, and he was like, "Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands." And since Danny Glover thought that he was reeling in pain, he was gonna have another gun. And I agree, he fucked up believing that.
Yeah.
And but I mean, obviously, it was just a plot to start having Murtaugh trust Riggs, because technically Riggs saved his life.
Yeah, definitely. And then because of that, you know, he takes him back to his folks' place. Yeah. Or he takes him back to his place.
His family's place,
and, there was a couple funny little exchanges there. I laughed when he was like, "What's for dinner?" And she gives him a real slap on the ass there. And because
that fool says it's like a brown covered piece of flesh or something.
It looks like a roast.
Like, it looks like a roast. And she was like, "You're being an asshole," and slaps his ass and shit.
And then his daughter gave Mel the googly eyes. Ooh, and Murtaugh didn't like trouble. That.
That's right.
And then I laughed out loud when the other brothers and sisters started beatboxing and rapping and outing her. That shit was fucking funny.
And then Murtaugh started beatboxing. I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah.
But question for you guys. If a guy asks you if you like his wife's cooking, how do you answer it?
I mean,
obviously it's easy to say it's good if it is good. If it's not good, what do you say?
Well, I mean, Riggs initially said that it was good. And then he lied. And then he said, I'm not crazy. And then said, oh, so you really liked my wife's cooking? He's like, no, I did not like my wife's cooking. It was at the very end of that scene when they're driving off.
Yeah.
But so, do you think it was important that he didn't lie? Or do you think he should have lied?
No, I think it was important that he lied at first. And then when ultimately they had their discussion on the boat and they came to an understanding where it was like, he's like, you don't trust me at all. He's like, well, you know what? If you don't kill anyone, specifically you or me, then I will trust you.
Tomorrow, he said. He just tomorrow. Asked for tomorrow.
He's for tomorrow. And then he's like, they're talking about, I'm not crazy. I'm like, I'm not crazy. He's all, and so did you really like my wife? And he's like, it's important. It was a moment of levity between them, you know? And
yeah. They could, exactly.
Yeah.
They level with each other.
Yeah.
The next morning, Danny Glover is woken up by Murtaugh with the coffee glass. Dude, after Murtaugh gets up, Riggs lays in his bed.
Yeah.
And Murtaugh's like, get the hell out of here,
get
man.
The fuck out of here. Yeah.
That shit is funny.
Fool's just a wild man.
He's all, if it was like, what time is it? He's all, it's daytime.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
I love that line. It's daytime.
He's like, man, get out of here, man. Because he had been up all night, right?
Yeah.
But now, GoBots.
That fool mentioned that little kids. You guys like GoBots.
I didn't know what the fuck that was. I looked it up. It was Tonka's answer to Transformers.
Wait, you didn't know what GoBots were?
How do you not know what GoBots was?
I never heard of it before.
Oh, my God.
Never heard of it.
Wow.
Kind of 80s kid are you, Clint? Get the fuck out of here. You just lost your 80s fucking card, man. Yep. How do you not know GoBots?
No.
Done.
We didn't have a lot of money, man.
We knew GoBots because it was like the knockoff fucking. It was
if
like
you didn't have a lot of money, GoBots is your shit.
Yeah, seriously. GoBots was like
I didn't really have Transformers either. I didn't have either one. Okay. So I didn't know what GoBots were.
Oh, man.
I never
heard that term before. They were like the, was it the Mattel or something? The
Tonka.
The Tonka answer to
Transformers. Is Hasbro?
Yes.
Yes, Hasbro.
Okay.
Because what happened was is that obviously what Transformers was is that Hasbro went to Japan to see what type of card toys they had, right? So they saw these toys that turned into cars, blah 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 blah, and they made Transformers out of them. And then this other Tonka was like, well, shit, why don't we do the same thing? They saw GoBots, but they were a lot worse. They looked a lot worse than fucking the Transformers toys, and they weren't as successful.
So Busey tries to kill Riggs after blasting a hole through Mike, which was kind of crazy because he like shot through the fucking heart and through the fucking
eggnog.
It's fucking crazy. I forgot about that scene. Maybe I just didn't notice that detail when I was younger. And then they dip out right after that. They dip out to go because they think that I don't know. It was a weird thing. They mentioned that his daughter, Murtaugh's daughter, was dating some guy, and then that guy's description was the same exact description as Busey, I guess.
Yeah.
Blonde. And then they went home and found out that she was kidnapped.
Well, no, because so in that scene where when they were in the boat, right? She comes up to him and mentions him that she wants to go, like some guy named Dave or something mentions him like this. She's like, oh, I want to go. So-and-so invited me to a club. And then Murtaugh said, oh, it was the blonde guy with the dimples. Or he says like
holes in his face.
Holes in his face, right? And then Rianne was like, no, it's dimples. Like, yeah, you can. I forgot what he says. He says something like, he claps back at her saying some shit. and then like, no, because you're fucking grounded. You smoke pot in the house.
Yeah.
And that's how he knows it, right? So when that happens, they had already like shot what's his face in the chest, right?
Yeah,
Riggs.
In Riggs, and they thought that he was dead, right? And they're like, and Murtaugh was like, no, have someone else take care of it. And like, well, it's close to your house. And they're like, yeah, sure. And it must be some blonde guy with dimples. I'm like, oh, you know who that is. And then he's like, oh, fuck.
It was a blonde guy.
Yeah, it was not a blonde guy with a dimple. That's what he was saying. It was like the boyfriend or the guy she was dating.
Okay, so before I get into my ridiculous things here.
Yes.
I had one question for you. Do they explain... Okay, Mel Gibson, during the course of the movie, has cowboy boots on pretty much the whole damn movie.
Yeah. Which,
right?
Yeah, obviously.
He has cowboy boots. But at the end, when he's fighting Busey...
No shoes.
He has white sneakers on.
No, he's barefoot.
He's barefoot.
He's wearing no, he jeans. Had shoes.
No. He's barefoot with no shirt on.
Yeah, he's barefoot.
Oh, rewatch it. He has white sneakers on.
They may have put white sneakers like he was running through the fucking thing. Right.
HBO Max, but, baby.
But technically, he should be barefoot because obviously when he killed the Asian guy that was torturing him, he had no shoes on.
Yeah, because when he breaks out of there, he has no shoes.
Yeah, so I think it might have been just like an anachronism that where it was like is like oh, obviously
we can't have him be barefoot for two days fighting.
Exactly.
So they try to put something on. But I'm pretty sure he had white sneakers on.
It may have been. I mean, I don't doubt you, but I always thought. Well, I mean,
I doubt you, Clint. No
shoes. Okay, I'm gonna have to look it up then.
I'm watching it right now. I'm bringing it up. You guys continue on.
But again, it must be. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, like I said, it's like anachronism. It doesn't make any sense. But they can't have the guy fucking, you know, running around on the street fucking barefoot in L.A.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it right here. He's got white sneakers on.
Well, there you go. See? He must have killed one of the guys and put some sneakers on.
Yeah, he's got white sneakers on for sure. He has white sneakers on. I thought it was just odd. I was like, how did he get those?
Again, it must have been because they can't have him like running through the
streets. He had a shirt on, actually. He had a shirt on in the scene, too.
He must have grabbed one from one of the dead guys.
All right, so I'm looking at a scene where he has no shirt on, but he's got white sneakers on. So
Yeah. I was like, what? Where do these white sneakers come from? Now, okay, let's get to It's Just So Ridiculous.
All right.
When the fuck have you ever known police officers to be sitting around the precinct singing Silent Night in unison?
It's their choir group.
I mean, my God.
You know what? I don't know. I mean, I've never been a police officer. I've never been a precinct. So, hey, this shit might happen in precincts. Well, you never know.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do know that there's like, I don't know, like choir groups or fucking, I don't know.
For the police, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, fair enough. Now, the scene was really funny when the little kids were like, don't tell him your name, Alfred. And he's like, how old are you? And he put his hand over the kid's mouth. Six. That was funny. I thought it was ridiculous, but also funny.
I love how Murtaugh treated the kids. He's like, oh, so you saw a man, huh? What did it look like? Was he black? Was he white? Oh, he was white. Okay. Was he tall? Was he short? Like, just the delivery of it. And then, like, all of a sudden, they're like, did you notice anything? And they're like, he had that on his arm.
Yeah, he had paint.
Yeah,
it was paint. And they're like,
just like that. Just like that. Yeah.
You mean like,
a tattoo. He had a tattoo.
Yeah,
and then
even with the knife,
and then Riggs is like, "Murtaugh, that's special forces." Like, what are we got into?
Did you notice when, like, after one of those scenes where it's like they know they're in deep crap, right? Riggs mentions to him, he's like, "Dude, we need to get two tickets to Detroit quick."
Right? One of his one-liners.
Right, one of his liners. But do you understand what that's referencing?
Axel Foley?
Yes, that's what it's referencing.
How?
Because when Axel Foley got in trouble, he went to Beverly Hills in L.A., and when they're getting into trouble, they need to go to Detroit. That's what they're referencing.
Hmm.
Why else would they choose Detroit? There's no other reason.
Fucking OCP, baby.
Yeah, well, right.
Let's but go, either way, let's that's go what get protected by the robot cop.
That's what they're referencing. So I laughed.
Interesting.
I laughed
at that. Yeah. I didn't put those two together, so.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that, but when you mentioned it, it clicked for me.
Yeah.
So when Riggs blasts the two guys next to Murtaugh's daughter during the exchange, I mean, this is an 80s movie, so you can't expect too much. But he blasts those two dudes, and she just stands there and screams. And I'm like, okay, it's the 80s. What are you going to do? But, like, come on. Just dip out. Run your ass off. And then, to top it off, she actually gets in the limo and does dip out. And the chopper comes for her and she just drives straight. Like, you can't swerve or slow down, or
she's,
you know, it doesn't maneuver. The chopper doesn't maneuver as well as the limo.
She's not thinking strategically. She's not thinking with, like, well, military tactics.
Yeah, true. I agree with that. I mean, she's like an 18-year-old girl, pretty much. And, like, she just saw her dad get shot. She was being kidnapped.
A bunch of white dudes just kidnapped her. Like, yeah, she's not exactly in the right frame of mind to be making, like, strategic decisions, Clint.
You know what's so ridiculous is that the guy in the chopper actually tried to even stop that car. Because a quick, I mean, the chopper's already being very, very low to the ground, and that's extremely dangerous. Just a little tip, that chopper is gone. If she would have, like, just turned to the right when
that's
the,
what I'm saying.
But she didn't know that. We're watching this thing. But imagine if you're, like, 17-year-old, you don't know any better. You're, like, watching fools get fucking shot left and right. Your dad gets shot, and he had a grenade that didn't work or something. I mean, come on. And she's, I mean, it's the 80s.
Well, what I do know for sure is at the very end of the movie, when he asks her, is she okay? She would not be okay.
No.
She would be severely traumatized. Believe that they played that out over the course of the next
movies. No.
Would have been interesting if they did, but of course they didn't, you know? No. Apparently in the 80s, you can fucking experience near-death experiences and you're okay. Now, you mentioned before the Asian dude, Goose, yes, that was torturing Mel. He's in all these fucking movies.
Oh, he's a staple.
He's in all these. He's a staple of the movies.
He is the 80s now, Asian henchman.
He really is. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, he was the guy.
He really is.
Yeah.
Mel calls him a chin, which was very terrible.
Well,
yet he practices martial arts.
That was.
So you practice martial arts, but you're racist against Asian people.
No. Maybe he learned. It's the 80s. He learned with Chuck Norris. You know,
I mean,
just because you learn martial arts, he's probably not learning martial arts from an Asian guy. He's probably learning martial arts from some white dude.
Again, if you get triggered easily, I probably wouldn't watch this film because, I mean, like when
it's the 80s,
Murtaugh and Riggs go to Dixie's house, and the house explodes, right? And Murtaugh is trying to
put him out
his jacket's on fire. He calls him, you know, the derogatory name for homosexual, the F word, and again, I mean, the '80s it was nothing. I mean, it was,
well, Gooch, even further than that, when they go to the shooting range, they're discussing like the possibilities on how Mike's daughter
and he
died,
and
he's saying, well, maybe that Dixie was in there with her, and that they were a thing. And he said, actually says it was disgusting.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, really?
He's like, okay. We've been assuming that it was a man. What if Dixie was in the bed with
I just realized that the Asian torture guy is fucking Genghis Khan from Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Now,
and he's in Die Hard.
Maybe you could explain this to me, Gooch.
Yeah.
When they're torturing Mel, and then they go to Murtaugh, right? And they show him getting punched in the face and this and that, right? And they ask him about the shipment. And Murtaugh says, go spit.
Yeah, what was that all about?
I always thought that it was like, when I watched it on TV, I thought that was the censored version. But then I watched it again. Obviously, I've seen it prior to this uncensored. And I was like, was that really the line? I agree. I'm like,
doesn't make any sense.
He cussed before. Why is he saying go spit now?
Dude, right after that, Mel Gibson's like, let's get the clock out of here. I'm like, you just said fuck five times.
Yeah. And then you know what he said? He's like,
get the fuck out of here.
No, he's like, what did the shepherd say to his sheep? And he's like, what? Let's get the flock out of here. I was like,
one-liner.
Fuck out of here. This guy's
the one-liners.
This guy's like cutting like dad jokes in the middle of this like a shootout where he literally just killed the guy with his speech. And I agree it felt so out of place with both those. Like I always thought
very strange.
I always thought when I watched it on TV, I thought that was like the censored version of it, you know? Because 80s censorship is a little bit different now. They would just put like weird shit for no fucking reason.
Like dub over some weird word.
Some weird word, right? Now they just like, you know, probably put nothing there. But they would literally dub out some weird word. And it would be like the people, like the original actors.
Or they would have them, yeah.
Yeah, they would have them dub it up. So, but although it didn't make any sense they were saying it. But that's
what I never heard that one before.
I'm like, why?
Go spit.
I mean, your daughter's about to get ripped. I think you'd have a little bit more, you know, a little bit more oomph in your threats.
And then right after that, they walk into a club. Mel Gibson blasts a dude with a fucking, with like a semi-automatic
SMG.
And nobody notices. And they just walk through the club calmly and nobody notices. I mean, obviously a guy does accost them eventually, but they got pretty far without no one noticing.
The first shot,
yeah. When he first, fucking weird.
Yeah, when he first walked through there, he shot the guy with the bald guy, right? And he shot that guy. And they were walking calmly because Riggs had his 9mm, his 9mm, and then he had the MP5. And then obviously the guys start shooting, like literally they didn't even care. There was like a crowd of people and there was just one guy just fucking blasted an Uzi into the fucking crowd of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to shoot Murtaugh and Riggs and his daughter.
And just start killing
people. Just started killing random people. That was a mass shooting there, to be honest with you. Back then on the woman. There had to have been multiple deaths in that scene.
Definitely. The scene where the commander goes up and he gets blown up in the car.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of grenades in there, Gooch. And yet when he blows up, it's not that big of an explosion. Am I wrong?
It seemed kind of small.
I always thought the same thing. I remember watching, that one show where they would put like the Spetsnaz versus the Marines and shit. It was on Spike TV, but they put like grenades versus grenades, right? It was like a Spetsnaz grenade versus like round grenade that you saw there. And they put in a fridge and they showed what it would do to like a fridge, right? And they obliterated them. To a car, it would probably do the same. I think after seeing that, it was pretty fair for one grenade. I mean, it was just a grenade. It wasn't like a frag grenade, too. It wasn't like a fucking a big ass. It was a little frag grenade.
Yeah, but that's one grenade. But Clint was saying there's multiple grenades.
The problem is I don't know if that one grenade would cause other grenades to explode. I really don't know. Mm. I mean, I'm not an explosive expert. Fair enough, I really don't know.
I like the little detail. Like the second the car blew up, I'm like, oh man, all that coke is going up in the air.
You see like the big puff. Yes. And then Murtaugh and Riggs said like, don't breathe it in. It's going to get you high.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice little touch. Riggs even says, but he says something a little bit more jokey. Like don't breathe it. You'll start like seeing like.
Yeah. Yeah. You either start seeing pink elephants or something
like
that.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I was like, oh, that's a nice touch. I like that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So at the very end, they sort of, clear the way and say that it's Riggs's investigation and that he can do with it as he wants. And he sort of goes toe-to-toe with Gary Busey and everyone's watching. I feel like that would never, ever be allowed.
Dude.
Because what happens if he loses?
It's the fucking LAPD in the fucking 80s, fool. Shit was like fucking anything goes back then, fool. Come on now.
That's crazy.
Come on now. Come on now. We saw this shit on the news. It was LAPD in the fucking in the late 80s and shit. So I mean, I'm surprised.
I mean, he did definitely say like this guy killed two of our own.
To be honest with you, what I'm surprised is that like that when Murtaugh comes out of the fucking club all fucked up with a gun, I'm surprised that white cop just didn't shoot him right there. He just didn't show up and just blast poor Murtaugh.
Well, they did say earlier in the movie when those kids were there, they're like, dude, police officers kill black people. That's kind of hard hitting.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. I'm surprised like that white cop that just didn't shoot Murtaugh in the face.
Oh, man. We didn't do it. So let's do our, before we get to the scores.
That DMG?
Let's do our DMG. What three ladies are we going to pick here? Definitely Dixie.
The daughter.
The daughter?
No, let's not pick the daughter.
Why? She's 18.
Okay, put the daughter. It's a little weird.
Well, not like the little daughter, but okay, fine. Not the daughter. All right, so 18-year-old, so Dixie, I would say the psych chick, the psych doc. What other woman was in this?
The
mom,
Murtaugh's wife.
It could be Murtaugh's wife, or it could be the Mike's daughter.
I suppose
the cokehead is to the jump. What about Victoria Lynn?
Yeah, I was going to say Victoria Lynn. Or, well, you know, one of the...
technically, she's a corpse, so...
She's dead, though.
But there was, like, a model, one of the models that was, like, caught, like, cutting the coke when they first got, when they went into that place. A
couple of those, yeah.
The brunette. Because I know she's, like, a model, like, that chick, that particular chick, that the brunette one was in there. I mean, this is a tough one. That's a problem. I thought the same thing. I'm like, maybe we should forego this one because there wasn't that many...
all right, let's skip it.
Ladies, I don't think
there's enough.
Yeah.
Let's skip it. So, scores. Actually, Kim Coppola.
Oh, the Kim Coppola.
You guys got to go first.
Shit, man. The I got to fucking think about this.
Kim Coppola.
A problem with this is, one thing I've noticed with a lot of these 80s movies is the ADR is bad. You know? When they go in and they re-record the voice for the scene because there's too much going on outside.
Yeah.
A lot of it in the 80s specifically, it's you could tell it's off a little bit. It's not clean. So like a lot of 80s movies suffer from the same thing, and it could be interpreted as bad acting, but it's just the technology wasn't there to make it accurate.
My problem is that the majority of the time on screen was Murtaugh and Riggs, right? And I think they did an excellent job, both Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, and that was like the majority. I mean, like 85% of the time, they were on the fucking screen, right?
So I mean, even the bad guys, you know, you got like Gary Busey,
the Mendez. I mean, even the daughter, I thought did pretty good for what she had to do.
Yeah,
I would have to put, you know, it would have to be. Like, you know, the one cop that was talking about, like, oh, you know about the 80s, you know, there's men have to be softer and shit.
Oh,
although it was funny what he was saying, I think out of all, even the psych chick, I thought did a good job.
We also glanced over the fact that Balrog is in the movie. The guy who plays Balrog from Street Fighter.
Yeah, but he did a good job.
The other detective?
Yeah.
I thought he did a good job, though.
Yeah, he was fine, but I'm just saying, like, we didn't touch on that fact. Like, Street Fighter, it's our movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was also one of the FBI agents from fucking Die Hard.
He was?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Our name is Dick Johnson.
Joel Silver just pulls from the well, dude.
Dick Johnson, no relation. But I'm going to have to go with that guy. I mean, I don't really know what the guy was, even the character's name was. But, I mean, everyone else did a decent job. I don't think anyone did anything, like, oh my God.
I'm picking Mitchell Ryan, the guy that was the Peter McAllister guy, the main baddie, just because there's just nothing there. He just wasn't that interesting. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know who it is? You know what? Now I think of it. The guy that plays the Husker's dad, Husker, the main guy,
Mike
Hunsaker. He did a bad job. He's like, you gotta do it for me. You gotta do it for me.
Yeah, I was thinking about him too.
Kill him.
Okay, I'll vote for him.
That was my pick.
Kill him.
That was my pick.
Because he did
Tom Atkins.
He did a bad job.
Congratulations.
Yeah, he did a bad job.
Kim Coppola.
All right.
That was easy. You want to go first with your pick, Gooch, or you want to go last?
Yeah, this is Gooch's movie. He should go first.
You know, I'm going to go first. This is one of my favorite action films of all time. I ain't going to lie. I enjoy it every single time I watch it. I understand that it's not a fucking, like, a masterpiece of thespian art. But if you want a good movie to watch just to have fun, and obviously, I mean, maybe I am looking at it with the rose-colored glasses.
Definitely.
I'm going to give this thing an 8.5. I love this fucking film. I absolutely love it. And I every single time I watch it, I love it every even more. So 8.5 for me.
For me, this is like the first time I've seen this movie in probably 20 years. You know, whenever I watch a Lethal Weapon movie, it's usually whatever's on TV, and it's usually 3 or 4, maybe 2.
It's a staple of Christmas for
But
me.
Like, watching it again, it's just like, okay, like, you get Danny Glover, you get Mel Gibson, a couple of bit actors, but it's like, this is like, this is on par with like a Die Hard. You know, again, it's a Joel Silver movie. It's basically the same thing, but it's like it's on par for that. It's like you get what you get in these types of movies. You've got a great delivery from Danny Glover. You get a great delivery from Mel Gibson. The story, it's concise. It didn't feel like it dragged on. It was progressive. It was perfect. Not perfect, maybe, but like it was good. And for me, it's like, there's enough humor in it. It's crazy enough. It's a quintessential 80s movie, and like I would give it an 8.
Devo, can you look and see what I gave Die Hard? Did I give a score for that one?
Let's take a look here, Clint. Let's take a look here.
You just mentioned Die Hard because I was like thinking about that
Die Hard. All right, Devo gave it a 7. Gooch gave it a 7.5. The Clinterist gave it a big fat 8.
Yeah, that's what I was actually thinking. I was like, because I feel like I would give Die Hard an 8. That's what I was thinking. And I think this movie is like a step below. I feel like Die Hard is just, the stakes are bigger, the building and all the stuff that happens and that actually gets the one-liners fucking right in that movie. And I think this movie is like a step below, but it's still good. It has Danny Glover.
No, I understand. Gibson.
They have a lot of good chemistry. I think the plot is actually maybe the weakest part of the story in a lot of ways of the movie, because the actors together are pretty good, and some of the stuff that happens in there, it's just this whole, you know, the Gary Busey thing, the stuff with the McAllister guy and all this stuff, it's not all that, especially when you watch it, and it's maybe the weakest of all the four movies, maybe, depending on your opinion. I might not agree with that.
All right.
Just because I think 3 and 4 are like really entertained. They're more comedies than action movies in a lot of ways.
Well, okay, that's fine. I think 3 and 4 are closer to what Die Hard is than what 1 and 2 are to Die Hard. Because I think that the story is a bit deeper in these ones, because the dark points in this film are extremely dark.
Yeah.
I think that's why it makes it a little bit better, because the way Mel Gibson acts out the parts where he's just a tormented person in these films. I've watched this movie multiple times, and every single time I watch it, it's like, I mean, you watch Die Hard. I mean, I love Die Hard, but he's not a tormented person. He's fucking a guy that's aloof, let alone on a building killing people. I mean, I love it. It's an amazing film, but I think what Mel Gibson puts into this film, it's what made him a superstar too. I mean, he was in the Mad Max films and all that shit, but I mean, it gave him range.
But those are Odyssey films too.
I love these films because the way that Mel Gibson portrays. I mean, obviously, he's too bad he's, you know, he may be a piece of shit, but
he's a recovering piece of shit.
But the way he portrayed himself in this film, he plays the tortured soul in this film so well. And I absolutely love it. And with the comedy and all that stuff together, that's why I gave it a little bit higher than Die Hard.
Yeah. I think it's like, I gave Die Hard an 8. I'm going to give this, I think this one's a step below that. I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I love it.
Yeah. So there you go. It's 7.8. That will be, hold on, let me reorganize these, see where that lands in our pantheon of movies. Sort this range by the F. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, shit, wrong column. All right, so that is going to put top of the list, Terminator with a 9.0, Beetlejuice with an 8.7, The Platform with an 8.3, Akira with an 8.3. Ravenous 8.0, Lethal Weapon 7.8.
We do have a couple things that we need to fill out there, because I know there's Ghostbusters up there that we haven't filled out.
So we have. We have.
Give us the ones that we haven't filled out, Devo.
We have Unbreakable, The Matrix, Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, The Dark Knight,
2.
Ghostbusters, and Zombieland that we still have to go through.
Wow, we have to fill those out, because we've all reviewed
those movies, but we didn't give them scores. We were doing recommendations, not scores those times.
So, well, Fantasy TV is going to end in a couple weeks, and then we have a couple week buffer in between Fantasy TV.
We could do the next one.
Yeah. We can do some episodes.
We need to do is that we need to do a big episode to fill those up, because we probably have a lot of talk about those films.
We should plan like a. Assuming that our families can sign off on it, end of the year, New Year's Eve, sort of monstrous live stream sort of thing, and we'll just like go straight on Instagram or YouTube or something and just fucking go over all these films that we hadn't scored on, fucking just jizz all over them, spit all over them,
Dude, we're gonna be. I'm gonna be so fucking drunk during the. I'm gonna love it. Let's do it. That's like when we did our 100 best favorite games. Remember that we did
that
shit.
It was our top games from 81 to like.
To like 90 or something.
No,
it was
85 to 2005.
It was crazy. I mean, we were like fucking 14 beers deep at the end of that fucking night.
Oh, dude, yeah, we were sloshed.
We were sloshed. So that was fun. So we'll set something up like that. We did a good job here. So what's up next, by the way? Who's up next? What do we got?
So the Clintorists pick Anna and the Apocalypse.
Ooh, another pseudo-Christmas movie, right? I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Yep. And then after that, we're doing My Chopping Mall. And then after that, we still have to get the listener choice, viewer choice. So
yes,
I'm going to be pushing that on Instagram hard. So if you guys want us to watch a particular movie, let us know. DMs. Yeah.
We'll watch
comments,
whatever.
Emails.
Whatever. I mean, obviously, we're watching Chopping Mall, so we'll watch whatever.
Yeah, we watched the Star Wars Holiday Special. Listen, you until next week, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll see you guys next week.
See you, ladies.
Yes. Goodbye.